This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. There will be a new representative in Michigan's 62nd State House District next year. The current representative, Kate Siegel, cannot run again because of term limits. Three Democrats are running for the open seat, which includes the city of Battle Creek. That includes Battle Creek City Commissioner Andy Helmbolt. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
We're also joined by Jennifer Bowman of the Battle Creek Inquirer.
Thanks for having me.
Andy Helmbolt, why don't you begin by telling the audience a little bit more about yourself and briefly tell us why you're running for State House.
All right, thank you. I've been a resident of the district, a resident of Battle Creek, for 15 years. I'm originally from northern Kent County, north of Grand Rapids, rural small towns up there. Went to college at Central Michigan University in Mount Pleasant, and then moved down here for a job after graduation. I have a degree, a BS in education degree. Started off as a teacher. I taught in public schools for 3 years as a junior high social studies teacher. Left that to go into business for myself, doing graphic design, websites, photography, all that kind of sort of marketing and getting the word out stuff, mostly for other small businesses and nonprofits in the Battle Creek community. And over time, you know, getting to know my new adopted hometown, starting to be involved in more things in the community, serving on boards, commissions, you know, volunteering and different things like that. You know, start to get the town more, get to know where the power is and isn't. And then eventually marrying that with my, you know, social studies background and deciding to run for public office. So I have been on the Battle Creek City Commission as an at-large city commissioner representing the whole city for 2 terms now. And then with this, you know, with Kate's seat coming open, I want to make sure that we are sending somebody good to Lansing. You know, I'm going to keep fighting for the people of the 62nd District, making sure we have, you know, high quality education for every child, no matter who they are, where they are, who their parents are, where they live, and that we have a healthy economy that works for everyone. And that's, you know, the doors of the state of Michigan are open to everyone to be happy and successful.
Jennifer Bowman, first question for Andy Helmbolt.
Let's jump into roads. Lots of complaints, maybe not as quite as many proposals to solve those complaints. Calhoun County townships, we've got an estimate to get all those roads in the townships to good condition. That's $284 million. Do you have an answer for filling the potholes?
For $284 million, I don't have a single answer, no. There are enough bake sales in the world, right? You know, we've seen lots of proposals, you know, at the state level. We've seen those, you know, our townships, local townships looking at ways of funding their own work on their own roads, which I think is definitely a commendable way to approach the situation. Clearly, the state government has failed itself and its people over the last couple of decades in allowing the roads to deteriorate to the point where they are now, where we've dug ourselves an incredibly expensive hole. So it's going to take an investment by the taxpayers of Michigan to get ourselves out of this. And I think that's going to necessitate, you know, a variety of revenue streams being dedicated to roads. And I think one of the largest problems is that just even structurally in the budget, there's just, take this money and put it into roads without any regard of, well, what does it cost to maintain our roads? We need to kind of work backwards and say, here's what it costs to maintain our roads, or even not just roads, but to educate a kid, let's say. And here's what it's going to cost. Here's what it ought to cost to deliver a quality service and infrastructure to our people. And then say, okay, then if that's what it costs, then here's the revenue we need to generate, and put that dollar amount out there and say, here we go, you know, people of the state of Michigan, this is what we need to pay for the roads that you want to have. You know, and as we've seen, the details of that, I think, are a combination of, you know, an increase in the gas tax. That seems like it's going to be part of the solution, which I think is appropriate. Clearly, people are with a flat amount, you know, with a flat tax on gallons of gas, are you in the amount of gas being consumed dropping, then, you know, we're paying less in taxes. There's less revenue going into that in that stream. And so we need to make up that difference with a structure that actually, you know, a tax, gasoline tax structure that, you know, actually serves to maintain that revenue source.
Should there be an increase in vehicle registration fees to perhaps make up for what may not come through the gas tax as people find more fuel-efficient cars?
I think it would be fair to look at that as well. I think we need to look at it in ways that that's have fairness in mind, and that's, you know, we have really high weight limits for trucks. We have, you know, the penalties for exceeding those limits could be higher, and which all kind of folds into if you're putting a vehicle on our roads and you're responsible for a lot of the wear and tear on those roads, and you benefit from those roads, you know, more than someone else, we should have, you know, a fairer sliding scale of what it costs to run a vehicle on our roads.
What are your thoughts about toll roads?
My thoughts are mixed. I think, you know, where you see toll roads in the country are tend to be through roads. You know, by that I mean you can get on the toll road, you know, south of here and go all the way through, you know, all the way to the East Coast. And so those roads serve a function, a true interstate function. But I think here in Michigan, you know, with, you know, 94 really being the only really, you know, you get from Detroit to Chicago or from Canada to Chicago, and really we would just be, that's a lot of intra-state commerce, and I think we would in essence be taxing ourselves all over again. So I'd be willing to look at the math and numbers involved there and how it would affect, you know, Michigan businesses and companies, but I'd be hesitant.
Jennifer?
Personal property tax reform. There's a proposal on the August ballot to replace that revenue with a portion of the use tax. Is that the way to go, especially with Battle Creek and all the manufacturing facilities we have? What do you think?
Yes. I'm in support of repealing the PPT. We've been given reasonable assurance that revenue will be replaced for our municipalities. The way it's structured is not a 100% guarantee, but that's the intent. And, you know, for the sake of, okay, let's figure this out together, I'm willing to go along with that for now. You know,
would you have voted for the increase in the minimum wage, which was approved in the legislature and then signed into law by Governor Snyder recently?
Yes, absolutely.
Why?
I think it was long overdue to be raised. If, I mean, if we're going to have a minimum wage that says, you know, hey, if you're employing people in our communities, you ought to be paying them a wage that we don't have to subsidize with other government, you know, programs. That's fair. But I'd like to have seen it a little higher, sure. But, you know, it's part of government is compromising, coming together, and nobody gets exactly what they wish for. And so I was supportive of it.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with Andy Helmbold. He is a candidate for the Democratic nomination in Michigan's 62nd State House District. That includes the city of Battle Creek. The current representative, Kate Siegel, cannot run again because of term limits. And Battle Creek Inquirer reporter Jennifer Bowman is also here. Jennifer?
I'm staying on the topic of minimum wage. I mean, you're aware of the proposal to have it higher than what was approved. Wouldn't have taken your chances? Would have voted for that? Taking that compromise that was put together instead of saying, hey, let's see what the voters have to say?
Yes, I would have voted for it. Because like you say, it was a compromise. You know, people from across the aisle came together to vote for it and said, okay, here, this isn't what some of us would like it would be. It's way more than others would like it would be. Let's take the deal and move on, and we can always, you know, keep working together on the future. I like that it's indexed to cost of living, which it hasn't been in the past, which sort of at least builds in some annual increase. So, I still would have been in support of it.
Where do you stand on the whole issue of tipped workers? Because that's another thing that seemed to hold this
up.
I
know that's definitely one of the sticking points of the ballot proposal. That it would put tipped employees at that same minimum wage, and you know, clearly employers of tipped employees don't like that proposal, and I don't blame them. I definitely think there's a fairness issue. I don't necessarily think that tipped employees should receive the exact minimum wage that other people receive, because they do in fact, you know, receive tips. I know they need to calculate the average tips they're receiving, and, you know, I'm supportive of maintaining, at least in theory, that if what you're earning plus tips is averaging to minimum wage, the same as everyone else, and I think that's fair.
The Center for Michigan did a survey of citizens based on some community forums they held and also based on some polling. What they found was that there's pretty much a status quo on taxes. There's really no mandate to cut taxes, but also no great mandate to increase them, with the possible exception of some dedicated money for roads. Can you live with that? Or if you were in Lansing and perhaps had the votes, would you want to, at the very least, take a look at the state tax structure? Not necessarily change how much is brought in, but change how we go about getting it.
I think there are ways to improve our tax structure to simplify it. I think the PPT is an example of that. You know, essentially, you're taxing, the PPT is taxing businesses investing in their business, which really doesn't make much sense from an economic development standpoint. It's, you know, it's better if a business is doing well and profiting, you know, from working in the marketplace, using our public infrastructure and whatnot, then that's what they should pay tax on. And again, I think the tax, our sales tax, if we need to shift more of that to sales tax, I'd be willing to take, you know, take a look at that. Like I said, you know, before with, you know, adding a percent and dedicating that to something. I think that kind of thing makes sense. I think, as I said before, generally speaking, we need to try to match how we tax ourselves to what we're paying for. I think sometimes it's backwards and we just say, oh, well, here's a number that we're going to spend. And like you say, people are generally okay with what they're paying. They want to see it used well. So if we can do a better job of explaining, okay, here's this tax you pay and here's why, because it goes towards this. You know, I was at the Bedford Township meeting last week, and, you know, one of the county commissioners stood up at the beginning and said, okay, you know, folks who use the argument, I pay my taxes, just use them to fix the roads. What that argument misses is that property taxes that you pay for your local property taxes don't go toward roads. It's a completely separate thing. So I think, if anything, structurally, we need to do a better job of saying, here's what this tax is, and here's what it's for. And so if you have a problem with, you're paying this tax and we're saying it's going to roads and you still aren't seeing your roads better, well, then now we can look at why not. Where's the money being wasted? Why is it, you know, I think one of the issues brought up by our county road folks at that meeting was the fact that a lot of this, you know, money in the sales tax money that supposedly goes towards roads, you know, funnels through the state, which adds a layer of administration to it, which bleeds some of the money off. You know, why not find ways of flowing that money straight into townships or counties, let's say, you know, more like we is done with to cities with the Act 51 money.
But when you talk about sort of working back from what do we need and then figuring out how to get the money, is there a larger conversation or a larger debate to be had there about the size of government and what government is going to do?
Yeah, and I think the example of that road funding is an example of that. Do we have too much administrative bureaucratic structure that's preventing that money that people expect to be going into the roads? Is it preventing that from happening? I think that is an example of what I'm saying is our some structural deficiencies in how we handle tax money.
Jennifer?
Workforce development. It's been a push to be done regionally. Battle Creek has a huge focus on training opportunities for manufacturing jobs, and it seems to have paid off. That's where our biggest job gains have been over the past year. Is that where we should focus on, or is there a need to diversify what opportunities we have to possibly offer a variety of jobs for people who might not necessarily go into manufacturing? I mean, how would you size up how we're doing on that?
I think that's both, really. We need to diversify, but not, you know, at the expense of losing momentum in developing the manufacturing sector. And there is still a lot of room within that sort of manufacturing and industry sector to grow from specifically with regard to workforce development. We have a great partnership, sort of a three-way partnership between KCC, Kellogg Community College, and the BCU, Battle Creek Unlimited folks, and the employers in our industrial fort with the KCC's Regional Manufacturing Technology Center that trains trains students, young and old, new students coming up from through high school, but also, folks who have lost their job or their job went away and they need to be retrained to do other jobs. Because what we're seeing is there are still lots of especially skilled trades type jobs where the need for those jobs is not being met by the supply of labor, welding, electricians, jobs like that. There where you can make a good, solid middle-class living doing these jobs, and we're not getting our young people into them. We need to do a better job of presenting those types of careers as options, expanding things like career and technical education and to meet those labor demands. On the other side of that is we also need to do a better job of supporting small business and entrepreneurship. We have in Battle Creek the Center for Entrepreneurship, which is, to our detriment, one of the best-kept secrets in Battle Creek, is that they really are sort of a one-stop shop for you want to open a business, you want to improve your business, that you can go to them, they can point you in the right direction. Cheryl Peters there, who runs that organization, is really pushes hard into youth entrepreneurship, showing youth, look, you could create your own business out of scratch and earn your own living, and that's something I have experience with. And I've even, every May they have their Generation E showcase event there. And I serve as a judge for that. And it's always awesome to go walk around the arena floor and see all the ideas and the passion and the cleverness that young people can bring to an entrepreneurial context.
Is that the way to attract that young professional that we're always looking for to bring to Battle Creek?
That's absolutely part of it. If we have fertile ground for entrepreneurship, in Battle Creek and the whole district, then sure, that's going to attract entrepreneurial minded people. And along with local leaders keeping their eye on the ball of how are we making our community a welcoming, desirable place to live for those type of people.
What about the whole issue of students who graduate from high school and the expectation is to go to a four-year college, and yet at the same time, perhaps getting some skilled training at the community college level can get them to, as you say, a pretty a job that pays well and without taking on as much of the cost and the debt that you might get at a four-year school?
Yep. I think over the last few years, the pendulum has swung very high to the side of you must get a four-year college degree if you are going to be happy in life. And, as you just pointed out, that's not necessarily the case. It may be for the majority of people, but not all. And I think we've gone a little too far in saying, prescribing what all of our students in the classes they have to take in order to be, choose their own way and be successful.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with Battle Creek City Commissioner Andy Helmbolt, who is running for State House in Michigan's 62nd District, which includes the city of Battle Creek. Also joined by Battle Creek Inquirer reporter Jennifer Bowman. Jennifer?
Something you're probably more familiar with than others as city commissioner is Kellogg Company's decision to relocate some jobs to the Grand Rapids area. And It was an issue that state legislators weighed in. Some said you got to do whatever you can to keep them in Battle Creek. Some said that's important, but it's important to note that these are also still in Michigan, these jobs. Is there a role for the 62nd state representative to have this relationship, to strengthen that relationship with the district's large employers?
Yes, I think so. And I think you kind of hit the nail on the head with the word relationship, and that's, we know that companies, especially global companies like Kellogg are going to be in at least some state of constant flux with how they're reorganizing their people. This has been a part of their Project K initiative that they launched, a couple of years ago. And it really does fit in with that. I think the way they announced the Grand Rapids thing was more of a PR train wreck than the facts on the ground actually were as we've learned more about it. What was really disappointing to people, I think almost unanimously, was that it came as such a surprise to people. There's such a disconnect between the Kellogg Company executives and the public leadership in the community. And I think that opened everybody's eyes on both sides of that equation that, hey, where'd we go wrong here? It's like, you know, waking up one morning and realizing you don't really know your spouse anymore. What's going on here? Let's take a step back and we need to spend some quality time together, you know, re-engage. And we've been doing that. I'd give some kudos to our current city management staff for really working hard to rebuild relationship with the executives at Kellogg. I've been in, I was at a meeting a couple weeks ago at Kellogg, the headquarters, you know, to listen to them describe their commitment to Battle Creek. And I think they are committed to Battle Creek. I mean, proof's in the pudding. They're going to have to keep proving it to us. And us, and like, you know, going back to your question about, you know, is this a place for young professionals? We need to prove to them that we're committed to this being a place where folks who want to work for them also want to live.
Is that distance that you described there between Kellogg leadership and community leaders, is it somewhat unavoidable in the current economic state that we live in, that companies are global, they have operations all over the world?
Yes, I wouldn't say unavoidable. I would say we definitely, as we've learned, have to be more intentional about it. You know, it's like you say, it's, you know, Kellogg Company is being led by, it's a global company being led by an Australian. And that's just, because you're right, this isn't the situation. It isn't the community. It isn't the economic climate that it was 20 years ago. So we have to be more intentional about, you know, hey, Kellogg folks. A point that Joe Schwartz made in that meeting was, you know, one thing that used to be was there would be, you know, Kellogg people and not just Kellogg, but representatives from other major employers on, you know, city boards and committees and things like that. And just more a part of just more of a cross pollination there in how we're making decisions as a community. So I think it's just we have to be more intentional about seeding those relationships.
Let me ask you about a couple social issues. Sure. Should the Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act be amended to include protections for sexual orientation and gender identity?
Absolutely. I'm proud of the fact that I led the effort to get an ordinance, local ordinance in Battle Creek passed to provide those exact protections for the people of Battle Creek. And it absolutely should be a part of our state civil rights law.
As of now, the ban on same-sex marriage in Michigan is being decided in the federal courts. But if it were up to you to wave a magic wand, would same-sex marriage be legal in Michigan?
Absolutely.
Why?
Well, number one is my belief that it would just be the right, decent, moral thing to do. I know there is, we do have a ban as a result of the vote of the people. And I know that, you know, the previous candidates you've had in here have sort of, I guess, hid behind that argument. But my view is we don't vote on rights. Part of the beauty of the American system of government is that we have democracy, majority rule, but in a way that protects the rights of minorities. The people of a state, you know, shouldn't be allowed to vote away someone's constitutional rights to equal protection under the law. You know, I represent the people of Battle Creek, but my oath of office, it doesn't say anything about will of the people. It says do my job and uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States of America.
So from where you sit, the judge in Detroit did the right thing.
Absolutely.
We struck it down.
Absolutely. I think my view since the people of Michigan voted was that it wasn't a constitutionally acceptable thing to do.
Jennifer?
What about religious rights? Those who are opposed to same-sex marriage have that argument that my religious rights need to be protected. Is there room for that?
Absolutely. If you are a member of religion that doesn't believe a certain type of marriage should be, then, you know, your church doesn't have to perform those marriages. And I think that's, that religious freedom argument cuts both ways. for the most part, we're talking about Christianity, and Christian beliefs gets the most attention. That's probably the most. I mean, there are other, certainly other religions at play here, but there are Christian churches who believe morally and with a strong, theological background that gay marriage is perfectly acceptable. So why shouldn't those churches be able to perform gay marriages if they want to? That cuts both ways from a religious freedom standpoint, I believe.
But let's deal with perhaps the more complicated issue, as some people would see it. The landlord, who is the member of the church that doesn't believe in gay marriage and holds those beliefs very strongly, and a same-sex couple comes to his door and says, we'd like to rent the apartment that you say you have available.
Well, now you're getting back into the arguments for the Elliot Larson, you know, the civil rights, protecting housing, employment, that sort of thing. I think, you know, we did away with, you know, colored only drinking fountains in movie theaters and that sort of thing. And I think this is the same thing. If you're going to do business in the public marketplace, then there should be, you know, a minimum level of, you know, here's what it means to do business in that marketplace. Here's what it means to do that business in America, is that everyone is welcome in that marketplace, and you shouldn't be, you know, prohibited from selling your labor, from consuming goods and services, rentals, because of that. Now, I think in what we did in the Battle Creek Ordinance and what has been common in all the local ordinances we've seen is, yeah, I think it is fair and appropriate to provide exemptions for entities that have a religious purpose, churches. You know, that if the purpose in what you do is religious, and the purpose of you existing is to, you know, worship and promote your religion, then I think it's fair, you know, for your employees who are doing that work to have to, you know, subscribe to that religion. And that's a pretty common exemption in the local ordinance we've seen, and would be fairly easy to work into the Elliot Larson Civil Rights Act.
Should marijuana be decriminalized or legalized?
Legalized completely? I'm not too sure about legalized completely. I'm kind of torn. I see both sides. I mean, alcohol is legal, smoking is legal, why not marijuana? But I think we are in a little bit different area there. But decriminalization is a route I definitely think that we need to take. The quote-unquote war on drugs in America has been an ongoing failure for decades now, and clearly clearly criminalization of drug use has not worked. It just doesn't work. Not only doesn't it work in its practical application, it disproportionately affects people of color and poor people. And in any kind of system that has that kind of effect, we need to look at and say, this is not right. It's not going. It's not doing anything for us. It's damaging us rather than helping us. You know, we need to focus more effort on drug abuse, you know, from a health, addiction, and recovery standpoint, rather than just criminalizing it all.
Jennifer, one last question for Andy Helmbo.
Kate Siegel hasn't endorsed anyone in this race so far. Do you think that helps or hurts your campaign?
I think it neither helps nor hurts my campaign. I mean, Kate, I think, and that's that would be a pretty common expectation. I think we all understand that, you know, Kate's her own person. There is a primary. We're all, at the end of the day, should be on the same team. And so, yeah, I respect her decision to stay neutral. You know, like I've told you before, the primary, you know, I run my campaign based on the people I'm going to represent. And, you know, I worry about them, not about the other people running the race.
But if things don't turn out well for you, would you be supportive of the Democratic nominee for the general election?
Sure.
Andy Helmbolt, thank you very much for your time.
All right. Thank you, Gordon. Thank you, Jen.
Andy Helmbolt is a Battle Creek City Commissioner. He is running for state representative in Michigan's 62nd State House District, which includes the city of Battle Creek. And we want to thank Battle Creek Inquirer reporter Jennifer Bowman.
Thank you.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.